China Update. I'm Dick Reeves, CBS News, New York. Tiananmen Square, Beijing, ground zero for potentially conflicting forces in China. Students there ending their hunger strike, continuing a sit-in. It's early Saturday. Pro-democracy demonstrators called for Premier Li Peng to step down. Li called for an end to the demonstrations, ordered troops to enforce the orders. Dan Rather is in the square.
Well, the mood has been dropping through the night, and with good reason. There are elements of the Red Army within 2 miles at the most in this direction, and no more than 5 miles in that direction. And the expectation is very strong that at some point, probably during the weeest hours of the morning, that the so-called People's Liberation Army is going to move in here. We know that Deng Xiaoping, the 84-year-old leader of the country, has come down on the side of the hardliners. He wants them to crack down, settle this situation down. They've declared what amounts to a kind of martial law in Beijing only, not in the country as a whole.
And rather, the incoming troops are said to be from outside and not warmly welcomed. Thereby hangs a tale told by Barry Peterson in Beijing.
All through this, there have been rumors that the troops within Beijing were not willing to move against the students, in part because there's such popular sentiment for the students. And over the last several days, that's very understandable. The sentiment runs quite deep. These troops were brought in from quite some distance away. Apparently, the authorities believing that they could bring these men in and they would be perhaps more willing, more compliant in following the orders of the government, which the troops in Beijing apparently were not willing to do.
Peterson saying he saw angry citizen reaction to troops not far from Tiananmen Square. Zhao Jiang, Communist Party chief, is not with the hardliners. He is reported to have offered his resignation. This has been China Update. I'm Dick Reeves, CBS News, New York.
CBS News, this is Judy Muller. It's 3 a.m. in Beijing, and the standoff continues between Chinese authorities who are vowing to end what they call the state of anarchy in that city and pro-democracy demonstrators who continue to occupy Tiananmen Square. Columns of soldiers have moved close to the area, but so far there's been no confrontation. CBS News correspondent Dan Rather in Tiananmen Square has been following developments.
Deng Xiaoping, China's little big man who leads the country at age 84, is making his move to crush the rebellion, the core of which is right back there in the dark with the student hunger strikers. Deng's right-hand man, Li Peng, has on these speakers made an address to the nation in which he's declared a kind of martial law for the city of Beijing, not for the country as a whole. He's declared this square a disorder area. He has said that he and the government and the Communist Party will not allow the hunger strike to continue. He says students have a right to protest if they like, but workers and professionals do not.
Earlier, the head of the Chinese Communist Party, Zhao Jiang, reportedly offered his resignation in an apparent effort to distance himself from the coming confrontation. He did not appear with Li Peng and other officials when they announced the crackdown on Chinese television.
It's early Saturday morning in Beijing, where the Chinese Communist government is rapidly losing patience with the throngs of student demonstrators who've been packing Tiananmen Square, demanding democratic reform. Several hours ago, their 6-day-old student hunger strike was called off, and the government announced army troops would forcibly remove the demonstrators if the students did not disperse. As we hear from correspondent John Sheehan, those demonstrators are mobilizing for a nonviolent response to the government challenge as Red Army troops roll into the city.
The student leaders have just announced their response to the government's hardline. The student leaders have declared a hunger strike by 200,000 students. They say it will begin immediately. The students are very angry. 200,000 people will go on hunger strike, say the students.
Now, John, we have noticed from the television pictures we're seeing that it looks like the square has thinned out. Now, are you saying that these students and supporters of the students have left the square to meet the troops?
It has thinned out because many people here from the square, whole columns of them, have marched in both directions down the broad Chang'an Avenue, that's the main east-west thoroughfare of Beijing, to block the army.
CBS News correspondent John Sheehan in Beijing. Annalise Riles, an analyst at the China Institute in New York, says history is on the student side.
If they injure any students, they're going to have 1 billion people opposed to what they're doing. You know, students in Chinese culture naturally are seen on the side of the right, and student demonstrations from 1919 to 1949, 1966, have always brought in social change in a peaceful and populist way.
Whatever the outcome of this night in Beijing, says CBS News correspondent Dan Rather, China will never be the same.
What these students started and what became a national movement is going to change the face of China, and I think fairly quickly. Here are things that are widely expected. No one can say for certain that they will happen. Deng Xiaoping will announce plans for his retirement in probably a day. He'll try to turn the government over to Li Peng, his right-hand man, and he won't succeed in doing it. And that the government and the party operation will have to provide at least a little more freedom for people in order to keep the movement from taking on another surge of energy.
China's Communist Party chief, Zhao Ziyang, reportedly offered his resignation today in an apparent attempt to distance himself from the hardliners' crackdown on the pro-democracy movement.
From Beijing's Tiananmen Square, CBS News correspondent Dan Rather reports the demonstrators seem intent on avoiding a violent showdown.
The hunger strikers themselves, they're determined to make the final symbolic gesture, but they want it to be nonviolent. What they have said repeatedly, hour after hour, is they can get us all right, but they'll have to come and get us, and when they do, we will be nonviolent.
In New York, Jan Barris of the National Committee on U.S.-China Relations says the government also has a vested interest in keeping the peace.
If it does turn violent, if the police and the army do use strong force, that it is going to raise the further deepen sort of the wrath and the discontent and the unhappiness, and I don't think it's going to end there. We may be in for a long, protracted struggle over this.
In center city neighborhoods, people have built barricades with heavy iron trash cans, metal fencing, piles of debris. On the outskirts of Beijing, students and ordinary people are blocking convoys of armed troops from entering the city. They lecture the bewildered troops. They tell the soldiers the students are patriots seeking a better nation. As the night's vigil began, a rumor spread that the government had set an ultimatum: end the Tiananmen sit-in by dawn or the troops will move. The Beijing watch tonight will be tense and fearful. Bruce Dunning, CBS News, Beijing.
State-run Chinese television denies that any such ultimatum has been issued. A spokesman called the report that troops might make a move tonight in about 3 hours sheer speculation made up by people with ulterior motives. And UPI quotes sources as saying that Communist Party boss Zhao Ziyang, whom the students considered sympathetic to their demands, has resigned and may be under house arrest. But that report cannot be confirmed.
Students remain in Tiananmen Square. Residents remain in blockaded streets. Blockaded against any army move to end the sit-in. President Bush at a Boston news conference reiterated U.S. support for freedom of the press and assembly in China, but refused to say any more in support of student demands, says he doesn't want his words to trigger any violence or military reaction.
They know of the United States' commitment to democracy, to the commitment to freedom, to the aspiration we have that all people will live in democratic societies. But I'm not about to suggest what I think they ought to do, except to spell out peaceful and continue to fight for what you believe in, stand up for what you believe in, but beyond that, I cannot go.
The students in Tiananmen Square talk of a government deadline now 2 hours off, a deadline for them to clear the area or face military assault. State radio and television, though, call talk of a deadline just speculation. Sinologist Michael Oxenberg says, from his point of view, military action won't work.
There's an old Chinese saying, you can conquer the country on horseback, you have to dismount to rule. You can't rule China through force. The leaders have to have ideals and ideas that appeal to the people. It's clear what those ideas are.
And those are faster and political economic reforms. American tourists in Beijing know they're getting a first-hand look at history in the making. They like it.
I think it's probably one of the most exciting things that's happened.
It's wonderful to be in the middle of something as exciting as this.
There's a wonderful sense of hope and opening that I find tremendously exhilarating.
It's a privilege to be here.
Not scary, and yet it is. Great crowds. They're overwhelming.
Hope nobody gets hurt out of this. They accomplish what they want.
The BBC is reporting word from student sources in Beijing that Deng Xiaoping and Premier Li Peng have resigned, but that is unconfirmed. If they do resign, the sit-in would end peacefully. But again, there's no official word of any kind that they have. There's a bit of parallel political upset in Taiwan. The premier, Yu Kuo-hua, has resigned under pressure from younger members of the government who said he was too conservative in carrying out political and economic reforms.
Mainly students in the square, but whenever you go outside the immediate square area, if a bicycle brigade goes by or trucks with flags, everybody on the street pays attention. The streets are filled with people. There is no way that you would know that martial law is in effect in the center of Beijing. You don't see any troops at all. Now, there are these pervasive rumors that the reason that you don't see them is because they're down underneath in this honeycomb of tunnels that is underneath Beijing and in the subway system. You know, this is just one of many rumors that keep surfacing. But in the city itself, you do not see troops. The ones that we have seen, and there's supposedly about 300,000 troops that are encircling the city, and the ones that we have seen have been maybe 10 or 15 miles away. Let me tell you a few other things that make us feel a little bit uncomfortable as we approach this newest deadline. We today found a convoy of armored personnel carriers parked on a back road about 15 miles from the city. That's the first time that we had seen that. Also today at the railroad station, about 1,500 other troops armed with AK-47s came in. Again, both of these units were stopped by citizens. But the fact that they are that they were there, particularly armored personnel carriers, was fairly disturbing.
Susan, thank you very much. A report from Beijing. Joining us now to talk more about the situation in China is Senator Christopher Dodd of Connecticut, a Democratic member of the Foreign Relations Committee, and Michael Oxenberg, a former National Security Council aide and expert on China. Senator, what we're watching is totally extraordinary. There's just no words cannot even come to describe the pictures of young people in China, in communist China, quoting Abraham Lincoln. It's an affirmation of our values, of what we stand for, and yet Gorbachev is getting all the credit. What's been your reaction?
Well, exactly that. It's one of the most profound scenes that I've seen in my lifetime. I never thought I'd see anything like this in the People's Republic of China, where literally there are more people almost gathered in Tiananmen Square than exist in Nicaragua, and yet the sense of proportion almost out of the administration. We spend hours debating Nicaragua, and yet there doesn't seem to be much being expressed by the administration. And I understand their unease about this. But it seems to me a more creative administration ought to be able to identify and express more clearly and more creatively how deeply we're moved as Americans when we watch a 6-foot statue of the Statue of Liberty be carried by Chinese students, millions of Chinese students and workers in a communist country. That is moving. I don't care what your views, whether you're liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican. The fact that democracy is its own best promoter, in a sense. And yet the only statement by the administration is things are in a state of flux. We're holding back. We're waiting to see what happens. I understand the politics of that, but I would like to think the president might be able to express in views that only a president can, expressing the feelings of the American public that would reach those students in China, reach students around the world, reach Panamanians, that we really care about democracy. We believe in it. And what you're doing is something that we profoundly agree with. And we want you to know you carry with us our prayers, our dreams, our hopes, our aspirations, and anything we can do to be helpful at this moment. We want you to know we're thinking about you. Just that message alone from the American president could mean so much to these young people in China.
Michael Oxenberg, you're an expert. You go over there all the time. Was this just a total surprise? Did it erupt basically from nowhere, or has
well,
this been
the,
bubbling?
The extent, the fervor certainly has taken me by surprise. But that the leaders of China were confronting a legitimacy crisis could be sensed even when President Bush visited earlier this year. There was some evidence that the leaders of China anticipated major demonstrations at the time of the May 4th 70th anniversary of that student movement where democracy was the slogan also.
You mean when President Bush tried to meet with that dissident Feng Liziu, and they really clamped down, you mean that they were...
Already at that time, there was some awareness that the populace really was deeply disenchanted with the government over problems of inflation, corruption, and really a failure to get on with political reform and put democracy on the agenda, how to involve the people more meaningfully in their governance.
Well, I want to talk to you both about U.S. responses. Senator, if they do clamp down on these students in a violent way, if there is a military attack on them in the square, which is, I guess, what that ultimatum says, mm-hmm. if they're not out of that square by dawn, mm-hmm. there'll be a military attack on them. What can the U.S. do? What will we be? Will Congress feel compelled, for instance, to start calling for sanctions, the ambassador removed? Mm-hmm. Won't this sort of create that?
Something along those lines. There's sort of be resolutions of one kind or another, I presume, introduced. But I think what is quite clear here, while it's possible that the Chinese military may win this battle, they may be able to physically clear that square and physically clean the streets of students and workers. So students may be perceived as having lost this battle. They will not lose this war. The corner has been turned here. And clearly, China will never be the same again. And that is really what I think Americans...
Many people say that about Poland, and for several
It's true. And so I think Congress, in a sense, and the president, while I said earlier, I respect the president's caution about overreacting on this. I think he's made a mistake by not articulating a view. I think we ought to show some restraint before we start to overreact, because clearly this is one battle... in a war that is going to move.
I think that one also has to recognize at this stage that the United States has developed a very broad-based relationship with China over the past decade. The Rockefeller, Ford foundations, other foundations are now involved in China. Many private organizations, universities are engaged in exchanges. 40,000 Chinese students are now in the United States. The real American influence in China, therefore, is not just the rhetoric of the president, but how our entire society will react should China, the leaders of China, try to rule through force alone. And I think that what you'll see is businessmen, for example, and others begin to withdraw from a society that is ruled through force. There's an old Chinese saying, you can conquer the country on horseback, you have to dismount to rule. You can't rule China through force. The leaders have to have ideals and ideas that appeal to the people. It's clear what those ideas are.
Michael, tell everybody what they're so afraid of in unleashing democracy. You know, I've heard you tell us that they are not as homogeneous as the Soviet Union,
exactly.
Which is hardly homogeneous.
It's a very diverse society. The leaders are sailing into uncharted waters. Whenever you meet a leader of China, at least this, when I've met them, two thoughts go through my mind. They're always concerned about the fragility of order and unity in the country, and they're always concerned about whether they can feed and clothe a billion people. And they're always concerned about the balance to strike between maintaining order on the one hand, which sometimes requires force, and then responding to the genuine heartfelt aspirations of their people. What's the balance? But now I think what we have seen is that the leaders may be losing that sense of balance. And in that case, it's going to be proper for the United States, I think, to withdraw a little bit from its engagement in China if this is a regime that has to rule through force alone.
Well, what does that do to our global policy, which has been to move closer to them as sort of a bulwark against the Soviet Union? If we are forced by this situation to pull back a little bit?
Well, I don't think it necessarily jeopardizes long-term relationships at all. I think the Chinese would be surprised if we didn't express that view of the government. I think it would be taken note that we weren't stepping forward a bit. Clearly, I think it's vitally important that we do it in Panama, we did it in the Philippines, we've certainly done it in the Soviet Union, and in the Eastern Bloc countries. I think it's important that the United States be perceived as someone that consistently cares about these values. And I don't think the long-term relationship between the United States and China has to be in jeopardy as a result of that. Because I again come back to the point I made a moment ago, and that is I believe fundamental change is occurring. And in the long term, our interests are going to be better served by edging that along, if you will, than by saying nothing about it or overreacting. Either of those two responses, I think, would be a mistake.
I want to ask you about the Army and what we're seeing so far, which is an enormous reluctance on the part of the people in the Army to move against their own citizens. Will this hold up? What is the relationship of the government to the Army?
Well, the Army is its own separate organization under the command of the party, really, rather than the government. And it's a military with its own sense of diversity and diverse loyalties. What we've seen, I think, over the past week is the difficulty that the leaders are encountering in bringing military force to bear in the situation.
Yeah.
This is an army that began as a guerrilla army and that championed itself in its own self-image is that it was always at one with the people. And for this army to be called in under these circumstances as the last instrument of rule to crack down on the populace is a profound development
now,
for the Chinese
Winston
political
Lord,
system.
Our former ambassador, said it was stupid and a tragic mistake and could bring down the government. We're running out of time very quickly. Is he right?
I have great respect for Ambassador Lord, but I'm very reluctant to say that the leaders of China are stupid.
Will they come toppling down? Thank you very much, Michael Oxenberg, Senator Dodd.
Thank you.